Welcome to Paper Money, the podcast covering the business side of the game industry. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Rhett Kipp.
Today is May 1st, 2012.
Woohoo! Happy May Day! Hope everybody's wrapping poles, wearing red, workers unite.
Not getting tear gassed.
Not getting tear gassed. No one's being run over in Tiananmen Square.
I don't know. I just saw the headline that the Occupy May Day stuff was not going well in Seattle. So
I can't imagine. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So the 99% sticking it to the man. So rock on or power something. Anyways. On that awkward note, let's move on to the news. Speaking of sticking it to the man, Monty Cook has decided to take his walking papers at Wizards of the Coast. And now most of you have probably heard about this. It's been all over the intertubes. Let me just read you the Monty quote. "Last week, I decided that I would leave my contract position with Wizards of the Coast," he wrote on his blog. "I am no longer working on Dungeons & Dragons, although I may provide occasional consultation in the future. My decision is based on differences of opinion with the company." Now, he specifies he loves the guys he was working with, his fellow designers, but they seemed pretty surprised that he was leaving. And given that the public playtesting starts, what, May 24th is the big announced date on that?
Right.
Given the timing of the departure, a lot of the speculation is, well, this isn't good.
No. You know, we talked about this just a little bit ago between us. And, you know, I think that from stuff that I've heard on their podcasts for the direction they're heading with the game, it's probably differences of opinion and where the game is, where he feels the game should be going and where Wizards feels the game should be going.
Well, now here's the thing, as a lot of people seem to think that this game needs to go back to the future.
Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you made the analogy earlier of New Coke, that this they need to invent classic Coke again.
Exactly. But, well, now the real question is did they already seed that market, right? These guys, you know, are they on their way to becoming Faygo, or RC?
RC, yeah. I mean, I have no idea. You know, for their own sake, I really hope they think this out, realize what they had, realize where someone else took what they had. And, you know, I'm still sitting here going, you know, they gave up the biggest market share there ever was in role-playing for something close to disastrous in relative terms, including the fact that they lost the overall top position to Pathfinder, and all Pathfinder did was take their old game universe, so to speak, and move it forward. You know, they took 3.5 and they made it their own, and Wizards let them do it. You know, Wizards gladly threw the baby out with the bathwater, and I'm going to stop now because
I don't know. I mean, but that's
I don't want to go on. I don't want to go on to more analogies and stuff like that. I haven't seen the new version of the game, I'm paranoid from their standpoint. I think that, you know, things that I've heard really worry me that they're not moving in the direction their audience, their real audience.
Yeah, well,
let's face it, third edition had a million people playing this at least, and that's not the direction they seem to be moving yet.
No, well, that's the thing, is that Wizards is in a position that Wizards is never in. Wizards is having to play catch-up.
Absolutely.
Right, it used to be, all right, TSR built, the Rock of Gibraltar upon which the company was built was Dungeons & Dragons, all right? That was the franchise. And occasionally they would come out with something goofy. They would do, God forbid, Spellfire, or something else. And if it didn't work, it was like, oh, well.
I mean, they could experiment. They had the money that they could experiment.
They would
because
do Spelljammer. They would do some of these other products, the Buck Rogers license, some of the other stuff that they experimented with. They might not have done much. They might have been interesting, Space Frontiers. But they were, you knew that, you know, that in the back of that, there was that 900-pound gorilla that was not going to budge, and that gorilla has budged. And I wonder, long-term, how does Hasbro feel about this? Hasbro's bleeding from their games division, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But I really do wonder if, corporately speaking, that they're going to ever make – I don't think they're going to make the decision to go back. I think they're going to I think they're going to try and tweak some of the stuff that some of the players were most offended by. But I think there's no going back on this, and they're going to have to find a brave new world of their own.
So yeah, I mean,
to mix about six metaphors.
I'm concerned, to say the least. It's their egg to drop.
And but the cool thing is, we don't have to wait that long.
No, we don't. And it's not like there won't be a plethora of role playing games to choose from. If Wizards drops the ball again on this one.
Well, and we're going to move on to our next story right after this is the most telling point here. My son, he's 13. He's kind of in his first real, role-playing game campaign, him and some buddies, and they're playing Pathfinder.
There you go. I was going to say all my D&D buddies, the guys who hung in there forever and ever and ever. Mm-hmm. If they aren't playing 3.5, they're playing Pathfinder.
Yeah, and that's a shame for Wizards. I wish them the best on this. Like I said, we've talked about this before. It was the gateway game.
Yeah,
it was the solid gateway game that the whole rest of the industry revolved around, and that's changed. It'll be interesting to see what happens May 24th. I'm sure, speaking of the intertubes earlier, I'm sure that there will be no lack of opinion on May 25th, the day after the public beta is announced and released.
I expect that it will be on the day of the, they're not going to wait that long. I'm surprised we aren't hearing opinions besides our own on this project. We should move on.
to be fair, I didn't dare go into, BGG and some of the other comment areas on the news just because, really, I figured that, we'll wait and see how this one plays out. But anyways, so Monty Cook that implies he was kicked out. He left Wizards of the Coast of his own accord over creative opinion differences. So it should be interesting, but let's move on to Hasbro.
Yeah, there we go. A fond company we love. We love, yes. Hasbro.
Sadly, they posted a first quarter loss.
Yeah.
Here, let me just read some stuff for you. The company, I'm going to read the money quote here. The company's game division was hardest hit, falling 9%. Now, it doesn't say if that's year over year or quarter over quarter. I'm going to hope that that's year over year, because after last quarter, come on. Last quarter was, forget it. Anyways, Christmas. The number two toy maker's revenue dropped 3% to $648.9 million from $672 million a year ago, with 289.7 coming from overseas market. And this is an analyst here. This is James Hardiman, a research analyst at Longbow Research. The game business continues to be a pretty big weight around their neck. Until they can see positive retail level growth from their games business, it's hard to see how exactly the business will turn around internally. Wow. Those are some heavy words. Those are the words that the analyst says right before spinoff.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I don't think Hasbro will do that, but quite frankly, they need a hit.
They do. They're experimenting in a lot of things. We'll get to more Hasbro news as we go. And, I still think that part and parcel, the problem is that there's a lot of things going on in the Hasbro game division where the problem is the people who understand games are not running the show. And I will leave it at that, a comment I have made numerous times before.
So, yeah, Mike Gray, if you're listening to the show, apparently Rhett's not blaming you. Sorry, I'm naming names. But no, that's the thing in Hasbro. When was the last big, they've done really well, quite frankly, with their hobby market titles, right? We, as gamers, we really liked the new Risk. It was interesting. I mean, it was weird. You can only kind of play it one or two times, but it was cool. We liked Battleship Galaxies. But
yeah, Battleship Galaxies, another great one.
These haven't been breakout hits.
No, they do okay inside the market. The kind of numbers that we see in those are the kind of numbers that I would expect to see on a moderate success from Fantasy Flight, as opposed to even a big success from Fantasy Flight.
Correct. The thing here, too, is that for a while we were talking about how Mattel was eating their lunch, picking up apples to apples. I think Mattel also did Blockus, Mm-hmm. And even Mattel's game sales have settled back down. All right, the mainstream has basically said we're not back into board games. Really, honest, we were just kidding. And so things like Settlers of Catan continue to gradually break out of the hobby ghetto, so to speak. But we're not seeing mass market stuff break out of its, you know, in terms of sales. So there are some games. Again, the whole sector is not doing bad, but certainly the mass market not doing as well as we'd hoped a couple of years ago when we were first seeing game sales take off.
Yeah, I think we really need to talk to the folks over at Mayfair because, you know, Mayfair has made probably some of the best inroads there, along with Rio to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And they continue to show real good growth in their market. Now, you know, the distance to grow is a whole lot different. You know, we're in a sense comparing, you know, apples to bushel baskets of apples. but all the same, you know, I think other people are making penetration in the market. Where Hasbro continues to, and Mattel to the same extent, continues to founder. They haven't found anybody they can buy, and they haven't created anything new.
Exactly. So let's move on real quick. Short story, almost a blurb, if you will, to the Hasbro story. Battleship has already brought over $100 million overseas. This is the Battleship movie, not the
staggering.
Game.
Staggering.
Staggering would be... Yeah, that would be understating it for me. That's a huge amount of money for an overseas open,
and it's Battleship. I've seen the trailers for Battleship. I saw John Carter. I would see John Carter again. I don't think I'll ever go see Battleship.
Hold on for a moment. Just for the record, I was going to talk about this because both movies star Taylor Kitsch, right? John Carter, it rocked. If you didn't go see it and you're a gamer, you totally robbed yourself. You totally robbed yourself. It was an absolutely fantastic movie, and now they're not going to make the second and third movies of the trilogy, so I'm a little upset, but I'll live with it. But you missed the really great Taylor Kitsch movie, and you're all going to go see the one with bigger explosions or something. And Jason and what's his name? Liam.
Yeah, Liam Neeson.
Thank you. I don't know where I completely forgot his name.
Marketing. At least with Battleship's trailers, you knew what it was about. It was about Transformers.
Yes, that's right. It was about blowing stuff up in the ocean. Yeah, as far as I still haven't. I know more about the Prometheus movie than I do about Battleship.
It really looks like it's by the guys who did Transformers. It looks like Transformers. No, apparently there's a battleship involved.
Somewhere.
Sure.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that mattered.
Suffice to say, it's already done $100 million overseas, which is probably more than the entire gross of John Carter.
I'm not surprised.
Yes. Well, the John Carter marketing was not particularly well handled, but we won't go there.
Well, we stop there because this is just bad. There's nothing good.
I could go on and on.
And we're paper money. We're not about the movie industry. So
no, we're not. And then there's only a weak tie-in with John Carter of Mars in terms of games. But Battleship apparently going great guns, if you'll pardon the pun.
Then we'll see how that transfers over into dollars for Hasbro.
Now, does Battleship open this weekend or next weekend?
I believe it's this weekend.
Oh, boy. So I'll have to rush out. Maybe I'll just finish up the Hunger Games trilogy. I've been reading that at home. So
there you go.
Yeah. By the way, the Hunger Games game, I think it was, I don't know if it was WizKids or who licensed it.
WizKids.
Yeah, it was terrible. Don't play it.
Which one? There were three of them.
No, the first.
Well, actually, there were only two games, and then the other thing was a collectible miniatures non-game thing.
Okay, yeah, no,
and they sold out, so it's okay from their standpoint.
Oh, okay. Well, then the collectible miniatures was good. The game was terrible. We played it as a family, and I didn't get it really at all. I think if you'd read the book, it made sense, but I hadn't at the point, and even then, it was a weak game. But I digress. Let's move on to our last news item of the day. Now that I've opined on John Carter and Hunger Games, FFG announces Community Wizard Player Finder Service.
Does your mouth hurt saying that?
Almost.
My head does, you know, from hearing it. Go ahead.
I don't know. You know, I still haven't got used to the fact that recording in the evening, I haven't really drank anything, but, you know, I could have, and that would have really made it a mouthful.
There we go.
Suffice to say, it's a player finder service. It sounds actually pretty cool. The interface, I'm going to read you a couple of some paragraphs of stale text here, so pardon me. Interface provides customized options depending on your account type. You can upgrade your standard player account to an organization account, such as a retailer, game club, or convention, and become even more accessible to customers, members, or guests. Convenient event management tools. Players can propose events through their favorite local retailers, and retailers can approve them with the click of a mouse, manage the guest list, send mass messages. And there's a robust private messaging system, including convenient color coding, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Enhanced control over your collection of games. Now, normally I have poo-pooed almost every online digital effort that has come along in a while. Now, right, you and I have gone to Gen Con, and every year there's some kind of cool thing. Yeah. What was the last one? Fire something? Do you remember this one? It was like Fire with a Y.
I know it's one of Matt's things. Matt does some really cool stuff, you know.
Yeah, but this one I think is interesting. This could basically, honestly, if you put a good user interface on BGG, you wouldn't really need any other tool. But no. BGG being what it is, it's a great site. Don't get me wrong. But this might do something because it's FFG.
I agree, and FFG has a lot of their stuff tied in with this. You know, we'll see. Well, they've got tournament stuff. You know, they've got their Dust stuff tied into this. They've got their Game of Thrones stuff tied into this. Mm-hmm. Their Cthulhu stuff and all of the related tournament, types of things that go along with that. I expect that the big one for them is going to be when the Star Wars tournament stuff kicks up.
Right, and the thing that I thought was interesting about this is because they're FFG and they're a board and card game company in the main, yes, they do lots of RPGs, but a lot of the player finder service stuff, it's never been, right, FFG has that built-in user base.
Right.
And they have the games, and they have a market that, with RPGs, it's kind of like most of the time you play with friends. I mean, I not to put too fine a point on it, but and not to you know, overgeneralize, but with board games and stuff like that, a lot of times you're always looking for new people. You don't have to have the same four people over and over and over again. So with FFG's breadth of their product line, this could work really well. And I think the key here is it's a player finder service, but look, there's a retail element. I think the tournaments and the things like that might separate it from the previous pack of player finder community services things.
That's where I'm looking at it as, you know, its greatest strength here is because of the fact that it's geared for both conventions and retailers as well as the finder service. And, you know, their conventions, their tournament-oriented type of events that they're trying to push, I think this is just a big victory for them. I don't know that it's going to be a big victory for the consumer at the end because I'm not sure how effective, you know, a tool this is going to be for them. Mm-hmm. I personally don't use these things because I happen to be lucky. I live in a neighborhood with one of the most successful retail stores in the country. So it's easy for me to find hundreds of different players. But, for the average person, I think this is a challenge. And more important, I definitely think that this really helps promote the non-Gen Con, non-Origins type conventions. Is FFG going to be at these things?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a big deal.
But see, I don't know if they need to. I mean, really, if you can organize online and say FFG, all they have to do is provide a little bit of swag.
Well, I'm talking about that. I'm not talking about FFG specifically being at a convention. Okay, okay. I'm talking about their events being at a convention.
Okay.
And an easy way to locate that.
Yeah, I think this is, like I said, I think this has a better chance of working than some of the other really cool ideas that I've seen. Partly because it's run by a business and who has an innate grasp of the community. And like you said, they already have, you know, a gazillion players they can sell to. So anyways, check it out. I don't have the link. I'm assuming it's on the FFG website. Go there, find out. And I apologize. I spent like 2 hours, yesterday evening circling the internet over and over, reading the same quotes about Monty Cook.
Yeah.
And everybody's got the same opinion, which is, huh, well, let's wait and see what this means. So it was, but I spent hours trying to find a definitive opinion on it, and nobody had one. So I didn't get a chance to look up the FFG URL. So I apologize. There's a little journalistic gap there. And speaking of journalistic gaps, we're going to turn to Mr. Rhett Kipp, because we want to talk about miniatures today. Rhett, last weekend you were at Little Wars.
Well, this past weekend and the previous weekend was Adepticon here in the Chicagoland area.
Exactly. Now, I had some friends here in Michigan, who went over to Adepticon and made it to the finals or something like that, and had to get up at about 5 a.m. Sunday morning to get bounced, I'd like to point out. But let's talk about Adepticon, because it was the weekend before, I think. It was huge.
It was. It was. I think they're actually surprised at their own success. Speaking of successes in FFG, FFG was actually in attendance Adepticon, which came as a very surprise to a lot of people, since miniatures-wise, they haven't really promoted too much stuff. And yet, there they were pushing, pushing their miniatures lines. And Adepticon is definitely, I think, the biggest new convention out there. If they can take care of their growth, their swag bag is insane.
If I'd known that, I would have been there.
Yeah, their swag bag is just amazing, and I won't go into details on it. Just look up Adepticon, and they'll tell you about their swag bag. But let's just put it in the, you walk through the door in the top 1,000 people, and you're pushing over $50 to $100 worth of cool toys and odds and ends that came with it. People were lining up for hours ahead of schedule in order to make sure they got the swag bag. So, they got a really cool pitch there to get people through the door early. The events, I've heard numerous reports from everybody, and we should put this into some kind of perspective. This is the only non-GW event. So this is Games Day, not hosted by GW, but they're supported by GW.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that real quick. For those of you who aren't familiar with Adepticon, it's in Chicago. It is the only Games Workshop Games convention that isn't run by Games Workshop.
Well, and it's no longer just a Games Workshop one. That was where it started.
That is where it started. Yeah, sorry. Continue on with your description thereof. I just wanted to remind people real quick.
Right. And then, the other thing is it's now the Nationals for Flames of War, the other big tournament-oriented game system. And they had huge turnouts. They ran both the Nationals and then ran daily ones, and all of those things were filled. And there were like 60 people in the daily ones, and I think someone told me it was like 180, 200 and some people. I don't know the exact numbers for the Nationals, but a large turnout for both of those, especially running against each other. And then there was Malfo. Malfo had a huge representation there, and Weird Games was there in support of that. I know that Catalyst had both Battletech and Leviathans represented there. Things that aren't getting a lot of representation in other conventions, they're there. Leviathans has not been in any other convention outside of Gen Con this year. Let me think of who else was there.
I'm really biting my tongue.
yes. But, they claim that the product is actually coming. Just go to their website.
Yeah, it's okay. It just reminds me things not to do on first game. One, use plastics.
Yeah, trust the people you're working with first. Yeah. So. I'm sure I'm leaving other people out.
Yeah, so it's a huge show. There's what, 5,000 people, something like that?
I've heard real mixed numbers on it. I've heard anywhere from 2,500 to 5,000 people, and I've not heard an official count from anyone.
Okay. And now the thing with Adepticon is that because it occupies a unique spot, right? The Games Workshop is the single largest miniatures community out there. Okay. Right. But because they're so control oriented, the fans don't necessarily, I think, get a chance to appreciate the product the way they'd like. All right. So you can't go to a Games Workshop Games Day and appreciate Games Workshop and also check out Flames of War. You can't do that at any other show. Even if you go to Gen Con, Games Workshop isn't there.
Right.
Adepticon is it. If you were a miniatures gamer who is not, strictly speaking, historical, Adepticon is it's the ball of wax.
Well, and even on the historical stuff, like I say, Flames of War is there. For historicals, there's only a couple of other, there's really no other system that dominates historical tournament play. There used to be. But there isn't anymore.
Sorry, I didn't mean to like downplay the historicals, but I was trying to save that for a little worse. If you,
trying to work on the segue.
Thanks.
But then again, the reason I point that out is because a lot of the historical guys were at there. Wargames Foundry, I have to get the right term here because they're all these wargame things. There's like four of them, all with wargames as their primary name. Give me a moment here.
Well, Rhett does that.
That would be Warlord Games. Warlord Games was there, and they were promoting their upcoming new World War II game. It's a skirmish game. It's being published, I think, by Osprey. I know Osprey's editing it. I think they're also publishing it. So another one of the Osprey, you know, spins, which is giving them big market. And here they were at Adepticon pushing it, a British company. You know, coming overseas to push their game.
Yeah, and for those of you who've been to most miniatures conventions, that's saying something. Most of the time, the retailers and the manufacturers don't travel that far for the shows. It's just traditionally been my experience.
Yeah, and to put it in also some other perspective, Adepticon is the exact same weekend as Salute in the UK, which is the largest convention that the UK runs. And why it's small by American standards, it's huge by the UK standards. It's about 4,000 or 5,000.
Dang. That is big for the UK.
For the UK, that's big.
That's right.
And it's their target market release things. So every historical miniatures company that wants to be cool has a release for that one.
So now moving from there, this is if you're a miniatures gamer in Chicago, April was a fine month because the week after that was Little Wars.
Little Wars, yeah, which is a historical convention if people are unaware of. Again, a really nice turnout. Their second year in the new venue. The number of games looked to be up. I was told that they were actually up over 2 years ago. Which is good since last year they were down, which means they're back to growing again. They've hit where they were and they're back to growing again. And very impressive given the fact that, like, the Flames of War crowd was not in attendance for the most part, simply because, you know, they're an older crowd and, you know, your significant other typically only lets you out of the house 1 week for a convention, not 2 weeks in a row. And they're both 3 day conventions.
I've been to Little Wars before, and this was a few years ago, back before Flames of War. It had taken off, but it hadn't really exploded. And the thing about Little Wars is that it's one of the few places where you're going to go where really it's dominated by historical miniatures, and there was a lot of homebrew systems. There were a lot of smaller systems. There were systems that you thought had been long dead, like the Sword and the Lion or the Lion and the Flame?
Sword and the Flame.
Thank you. The Sword and the Flame. There was a lot of, it was a chance for me to play some really neat stuff that I frankly wasn't going to play otherwise. And I had a great time playing, the Sword and the Flame and went out and bought the rules, I think shortly thereafter, because I'd been exposed to it at this show. And so the thing with, but I can say this. Rhett, historical miniatures are kind of a backwater.
They are. They're definitely a backwater. Historicon being the big convention for that is still about the same size as Adepticon now. It's somewhere around, 3,000, I believe, is what the numbers are. And that's the big one for the historical ones. And again, when that, you can start to compare that with, like Origins and Gen Con, it's really tiny. But not too small for a regular localized convention. What I'll say for HMGS is, that is who puts this out. That happens to be East, who does Historicon, and it's Midwest, who does Little Wars. The interesting thing, again, about Little Wars, though, is, you talk about it being historical, yet the dominant games, the games that really were out there and I think catching a lot of people's attention, Frank Chadwick had a new Space 1889 game that he was running, which was a Martian theme. So it's the Colonials versus the Martians. It's historical, but it's not. It's science fiction.
I play actually one of my favorite steampunk games ever. I think I commanded the Velocipede Squadron at Little Wars, which the armored bicycles.
Yeah.
might have been armored unicycles, quite frankly. But it was, yeah, it's a hoot and a half. It's historical, but not historical. There is a lot of stuff going on, and there's a lot of genres represented. There is World War II. There's Napoleonics. The 1 year I was there, I think there was some French and Indian War stuff. So there's really a lot of different periods, plus the steampunk. I remember doing one that was set. It was almost like a noir setting. It was, you know, the Nazis and the mobsters and some other stuff, you know, with the homebrew rule system. So there really is some interesting kind of stuff there that really you're not going to see, almost anywhere else. And of course, there's always the terrain at Little Wars is always amazing.
Yeah. There was amazing ones. The guys who always do their big zombie game this year, the zombies was the small part of the thing because they ran Dust Tactics. So Dust having zombies in it, there had to be zombies because they always have zombies in their game. But, you know, this year it was about 30 feet of table, giant submarine pen, Americans landing on the beaches, trying to crash into the submarine pen. It's a very weird game, but a rocking game. Ran for hours, and they ran it like two or three times at the convention. It was always full. As you mentioned, lots of historical games. There's huge Napoleonic games. They always theme. So, like this year, there's a bunch of American Civil War 150th anniversary things going on. Napoleonic 100 or 200 anniversary games going on. Naval games that you don't normally get to see simply because people don't have the space to put them on like they can put them on there.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I guess let me get down to the money question, which is how are the retailers doing? Right? How are the guys with the how busy were the booths? Were people walking around with stuff? Were people buying stuff?
People were definitely buying stuff. I spoke to Iron Wind, and Iron Wind seemed to do better this year than they did last year. They really didn't like last year. I talked to the guys at Games Plus. Games Plus, it was, I'm not sure how well Games Plus did, but they were sharing a booth with Pico Armor, and that was doing just great guns. That was just selling off, you know, pretty much off the wall, off the rack. Battlefront/Flames of War guys were there, very specifically not carrying their lines so that they wouldn't interfere with one of the other retailers whose name escapes me from Wisconsin.
You're thinking of the Last Square.
The Last Square. Last Square was there, and they had the Flames of War stuff. And because the Flames of War guys had come in for Adepticon, they just stayed over. And, you know, they were there. They did a really nice thing where they didn't tread on other people's toes who'd always carried their product line for them. And they brought in stuff that normally wouldn't be seen, and answered lots and lots of questions. I know that I saw them always answering questions. With the new third edition, people are just real excited and, you know, trying to find out what's going on. So there was always people answering questions. A lot of painted miniatures that were being sold, which is pretty standard. A lot of smaller companies that you don't normally see all seem to be doing decent business, but I didn't really get to talk to too many people as far as how good it was this year. And generally, that's not a bad thing because
you were
usually
busy
here,
playing, weren't you?
I was actually busy playing for a change. And the other thing is, normally the only time I hear from them is when they are bitching. So when they don't stop me to bitch at me about how bad things are, it usually implies that things are doing well enough that they don't need to talk to me about anything.
Well, let's move on to our listener mail segment. Now we didn't really have any, listener mail, but I did get a couple of posts read on the Purple Pawn. Remember we did the story about the guy who's running the game design seminar at Ohio State University. And he said that really, you can't design a good computer game until you've designed a board game. And I thought, well, there's some truth to that. I can see this. We got a couple of posts that basically said, that's a load of hooey. And that's all they said. They didn't elaborate as to why this was a load of hooey. It was the classic internet troll job. And I thought it would have been an interesting discussion to have, because certainly you and I are both no strangers to computer games, even though we're rooted in the board game industry. I thought that would have been an interesting discussion. And I can see that the point is there, right? Like, no, you didn't really have to write Settlers of Catan before you could write Skyrim. And I could, so I can see some of this. But I was interested, I would have liked to have heard the other side articulated, but we didn't quite get that. We kind of got a couple of posts that said, that's, in fact, one of them even said, that's Hui and I'm living proof. And I'm like, I didn't recognize the name, so.
You know, I go along with, I won't say it's Hui. I think there's a lot of information. You know, we talked about this last time. I won't go back into elaborating on it. Listen to our last show if you'd like to hear the elaboration. But, you know, I do think that it gives them a broader perspective, having designed it. And we've talked about one of the other great things about IPs in this industry. It's expensive to do a computer game IP. It's not the same to create a really good IP in the board game, role-playing miniatures market. You can certainly get away for the price of lunch in most of those computer game companies.
That's true. I mean, you can do really, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pages of background to flesh out your IP for almost free, right, in the game industry, in the board game industry, as compared to, say, the computer game industry. But I think very specifically he was talking about rule mechanics.
Yeah,
and I guess I'm of a mind that says that one of the things that computer games that is both nice and detrimental about computer games is that, especially, and this is somebody, like, I played a lot of the Matrix, I think it's Matrix Games who does the war game type stuff on computers.
Right.
You can just go in and start pushing squares around, all right, without knowing any of the underlying mechanics and how the units deteriorate over time in combat and how quickly they're replenished and what their supply lines need to be and all this stuff, because the computer handles it.
Right.
So you don't have to think about that when you play it. And so in some ways it's good, in some ways that bad, because it doesn't give you a chance to master the system, as it were, to understand it, to grok it the way you kind of have to make a complex board game work. And so from a mechanics perspective, yes, I see this. But again, like I said, I just thought it was interesting.
But that's a player's perspective as opposed to a designer's perspective, because the designer put that in there.
But as a designer, are you? I don't know. I guess is I don't know. I have never tried to design a computer game, and quite frankly, the games I've tried to design were of limited enough scope that, quite frankly, I can say yes, like all gamers, I've tried it, but no, I didn't entertain any real ideas about it. But the thing with the computer game is that, how can I say this, is that I guess his point was, okay, designing the physics of a new platform hopper, it's not the same as designing a game. And to some extent, I see that. But again, I thought it was interesting that people said that the comment was hooey, but didn't go to the trouble of putting in a second sentence that said, because. So anyways, I hope, like you said, if you're listening to the show and you disagreed with that line of reasoning enough to care about it, I would love to hear about it.
We would. We would really like to hear back from you. We would like to hear why you think that's the case. And we're not necessarily disagreeing with you at all. We would just like to hear your explanation of why you view certain things. You know, because the question is, when he made that statement, was he talking of adapting a engine that already existed to a new system, or was he talking about creating a whole new engine? And, you know, to me, they're apples and oranges. You know, can you take the current Skyrim system and adapt it to a million different platforms? And the answer, you know, concepts. And the answer is, of course you can. But you can tweak that. But can you create that from the beginning without any other background? Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, if you're out there and you're working in that industry and you can come back and explain why that isn't the case, why you can just do it from scratch, love to hear that. You know, that's the kind of stuff that we and our listeners would love to hear. So please get back to us.
So, Rhett, how could they give us this feedback in comments?
Well, they can reach us at, he says as his entire computer goes down.
Oh, do I need to handle it this week?
Go ahead. You can handle it this
week. All right. You can find us at purplepawn.com/papermoney. And 20 years into the internet revolution, I really shouldn't have to tell you that's a forward slash, but just in case, it's a forward slash paper money. Our email is papermoney@purplepawn.com. And you can always Skype us at Paper Money Podcast. That's our handle on Skype. And finally, if you just want to track down our RSS feed, that's purplepond.com/category/papermoney/feed. And like I said, we would love to hear you from you. We got a great letter this week from longtime listener Dan Glovier. Dan, I think, helped host an episode. Dan had some great comments about Kickstarter, and we're going to talk about those on the next show, most likely. I think we need to talk about – we've talked about Kickstarter before, Rhett. I think it's time we come back around and talk about it again.
Yeah, Kickstarter is really starting to impact our industry massively, and I think we're getting a little better handle on it at our end and maybe be able to talk more intelligently about it now.
Exactly. Well, you know, we'll save it for the next show. Next show, but yes, we are going to talk about Kickstarter. And that said, I think we're done.
Yes. That's it for us this week. We will speak to you in what will be the end of May.
Wow. It's going to be summer.
It's going to be summer, and I believe it will be recorded either the week before the end of May or it will be in June, since Origins is that last weekend of May.
Is it really that? I can't believe it's going
to be. It's about 4 weeks away, yeah. Origins is only about 4 weeks away.
All right. On that note, y'all take care or something.
Well, that's it for us. I'm Rhett.
And I'm Ben. That almost worked. Unless you're called Rob right there at the end.
No, I think we're okay.
Okay, I was getting away. I was worried you didn't say Kip, so.
I just decided I'm not going to use it anymore. I've dropped my name.